Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026. Today, review for the midterm exam. I will say a few preliminary words about it, then we'll look at the numbers, which of course are part of the review in this case, but then I'll take you through a step-by-step of what you should study for the midterm exam. That will be, you write down what I say, and that will be your study guide. And then I will open it up for you to ask me questions about it. A few preliminaries on the exam. First and foremost, you are permitted one 6x4 note card, front and back. You can also have that financial analysis formulas sheet for the exam. And those are your, make sure it's printed out. It will be in the Respondus Lockdown browser. The two spreadsheets that you will use for it are already embedded, just like they were on the last two quizzes for the exam. So you won't have to worry about accessing them. They're within the Lockdown browser itself for you. As far as other matters are concerned, of course, it is a 75-minute exam, and you must be in attendance here in the classroom to take it. I've had a couple of problems with students who are not in attendance, but they're taking the exam, and we shut the exam down if you're not here for it. If your attendance radar does not work, just hold your hand up, and we'll come up and mark you into attendance, so that problem is solved. As far as anything else goes, don't sit on the back wall, because that way we can't see you if your screen as we proctor the exam. Definitely, if you're planning to study for it, first, as far as review goes, definitely look at your notes and also open that podcast, the podcast, and listen to them. That's isu-prof.com. Have your notes open while you are listening to the audio, and it will amaze you at how many things you might have missed, and then you can catch them. Also, the next, of course, obviously, is the lectures, your notes, and then as a backup, also, the PowerPoint presentations are a decent study resource. The textbook is your last resort. It's pretty difficult to go through and review for an exam reading the textbook over again, but you can certainly access it for some materials. Or the exam, I'm trying to think, did I forget anything? Do's and don'ts in class. Yeah, the note card is, make sure you make, and if there are some folks who have this, a thing where they'll actually type out a note card in a Word document and then shrink it down to a 4x6 piece of paper. That's a good idea, but of course, if you shrink it down too much, you're not going to be able to read it. But again, a note card is perfectly acceptable for the exam, front and back, 4x6. And I do have some in my office. If you don't have one of those, just pop by and ask. You can also come to my office hours tomorrow. We have a lot of office hours tomorrow. If you've got last minute questions and on content, or if you want to see one more time how to use those Excel spreadsheets, that's what we do. That's one of the big things we do, is just make sure that people know how to use them very effectively. Okay. I look at the numbers. just to get started on this. And I'll also be mentioning, while we're looking at them, a few possible questions that I could have on the exam. But looking at the numbers, as you might have noticed, we are now in a regional war. It is not a police action. It is not an advisory action. This is an actual war. And the big thing about this one is, well, there are a couple of big things, is that the Strait of Hormuz, as I said several times over the past few weeks, it is indeed closed now. And that is where 20% of the world's oil goes through that strait, which Iran controls. And that means that no oil ships are coming through there. Two oil ships and a cargo ship, I think it was, tried, and now they are on fire and sinking, and most of the crew is not very happy, I would imagine, being dead and all. So that has caused the price of oil to spike, and as that oil price stays up, that will begin to sap off the strength of the economies of all the countries that need those hydrocarbon products. And there were also, it's not just oil going through there, there are a lot of goods that go through there too. And so those ships are not going to get out, and so that will create, not major, but some supply chain issues. The markets reacted very negatively at first to this in the weekend markets, but they have gotten themselves back straight now that nothing major is, not a major rise, but at least the terrible negative numbers have kind of vanished here. As you can see on the other side of the world, where they will see these impacts rather aggressively, you can see that the Nikkei has shown that it is not very happy last night. It was down and stayed down and ended at down 1.35%, Hang Seng down more than 2%, and other ones, Australia was down to about 0.5%. They're still trading, interestingly. And now in Europe, they're concerned about this, of course, because they are more vulnerable than the U.S. is to direct attacks from the Iran and its allies. And so their markets are very negative on this right now because, like I said, they need the products out of the Middle East. They also need to have a better security than they have right now with the potential for attacks in Europe. So the CAC was down over 2%, and the DAC was down. London FTSE was down about 1.25%. So they are still reacting negatively. The markets here in the United States were reacting negatively at first, but now they are coming back up. The Dow has gone from rather significant negative territory to the point where it's down only about 0.2%. S&P 500 has actually made it. It's kind of on the brink here. It's about flat right now. But the NASDAQ has made it into positive territory, more than 0.25% up. So that's good news on our side of the world. Now, let's look at the commodities here. The first thing that we want to talk about is oil. We see that Brent has taken it up quite a bit. It's down a little bit from where it was, but you understand this. That's a sweet crude, and that a lot of sweet crude, very light oil, very attractive, valuable oil, is produced in the Middle East, and it goes through the Persian Gulf on very large cargo ships, and they can't get through right now. Many of them have either turned around as they were approaching the strait, or they have just anchored off the coast. And there's also the threat, too. There's a risk factor, too, that apparently the missiles that are being fired by the Iranians and by their allies around the Persian Gulf are pretty good at hitting targets. So there is a lot of concern that even if the ships stop and wait in there for the conflict to cool off, they could still be sitting ducks for being hit, which would reduce even more the supply of oil, at least in the intermediate run. So that's going to be an issue for a while. Now, both of them are well above where they were even a week and a half ago. But also, interestingly, gold spiked at first, and now it's cooling down. However, from what I have heard, that's going to be temporary. Gold is going to turn back around and start rising again over the next couple of days. I don't know that for sure, but some of the traders that I know are saying this is only a temporary slide back in gold. It's going to start going back up again as more of the data comes in, information comes in, that this is not a short-term fight. This is going to be long. It's going to be widely regional. We have issues now beginning to show up that the Houthis are going to get angry and start shooting ships again in the around the area, and other forces, Lebanese, and all that are going to get driven into the fight. And so it's going to be longer, and this creates volatility. Now, I want you to look back up here. You see how the VIX spiked? Remember I told you the VIX is volatility. It's a metric of volatility. See how it spiked there? That's not surprising, but it's cooling off. Notice that as the volatility cooled off, the U.S. markets began to come back to life. And that's not unusual for that to happen. Sort of this negative correlation between volatility and stock prices, because risk causes prices to go down. As risk lays back, stock prices begin to recover. So you can see that there is a kind of logic to how these markets are interlocked, and they move in kind of well understood ways. So let's keep things going here. Now, one thing that is for sure is that you are going to see some stocks being winners in a war and some stocks being less likely to be winners. For example, LMT, that's Lockheed Martin, up 2.5%. Lockheed Martin is a war company. It builds war machines. The engines of war come out of companies like Lockheed Martin. And as you can see, investors are very excited to invest in these companies right now, because you don't get a good war like this too often. And so this is an opportunity for a company like that to make a lot of revenue through the production of military aircraft, but also there is the replacement of ordnance, the explosive, the missiles and shells and all that, and bullets. So yeah, Lockheed Martin is going to be up. Another one that tends to be doing good in these kinds of conflicts. I wonder how Halliburton is doing right now. Halliburton. Come on. Oh, it's down. That's interesting. I wonder why they would be down. They're kind of a supply company for these, for a lot of different things. But let me dig in here. I was going to just show you one or two just to get things going for the day and all of that. On the exam, I will ask you some questions about specific stocks that I've shown you on a number of occasions. Which ones of these are low risk? Which ones are high risk? Kinds of questions to make sure that you have been in attendance and you know, begin to appreciate what constitutes a high risk stock versus a stock that is not as high risk. So as we can see with a company like, for example, Tesla, I've shown you a number of times that a company like Tesla is an extraordinarily high-risk company with a very high beta. I've shown you some other ones that are very high-risk. But I've also shown you, and we've calculated holding period returns, for a number of companies that are lower risk, companies like AT&T, mobile phone companies, companies that produce products that are used by consumers, whether there's good times or bad times. In other words, consumer defensive companies. So make sure that you look back through your notes where I've talked about these, because I could bring these up on the exam. Other than that, as far as the stock screens are concerned, I will ask you a holding period return question. You have a spreadsheet. All you have to do is put in the price here, and then in the next cell, the price here. And then if there's a dividend yield, put that in the third shell, and you've got the answer to the question. Now, let me get down to the specifics of the review. And I'm going to pull this up and have a look at, make sure that I've got the midterm in front of me. Actually, I could just put the midterm up for you guys to see. Oh, no, I won't do that. Okay, edit. Okay, so let's start out here. And some of this is organized and some of it is just here and there in this. First of all, as far as the math questions go, you have done these on quiz 3 and on quiz 4. I send the same messages to you this time. They are very similar to those questions, just different numbers. And the order of the questions follows the order of the spreadsheet. The works first in that stock or present value and future value spreadsheet. The first tab is a lump sum present and future value. So those are the first questions I ask you in the numerical part of the exam. Then on the second sheet, you have the present value and future value of an annuity and a loan payment calculator. Those will be the next three questions. I will also do a holding period return question in there, which is that other spreadsheet. So in other words, if you follow the quiz, quiz 4 was an excellent example. It will look just like quiz 4 when you hit that part of the exam. So if you have questions about how those spreadsheets work, get to our office hours tomorrow. I also have office hours. I'll be there on Wednesday. Now, I'll be out of action on Thursday and Friday because of a personal surgery, but you can send email messages to me, ask me a question. Don't make it some philosophical question. Make it kind of specific, if you will, but you've got resources for getting this done, and the quizzes, definitely. Those quizzes are one of your best overall study guides for my midterm. I counted no fewer than 10 questions on this midterm that are virtually the same as you saw on a quiz. Maybe a different, slightly different wording, but even there, some of them are almost to the very word what I asked you on the quiz. So study those quizzes really good, because they are an excellent warning for what you're going to see on the midterm. Now, as far as the midterm goes, I started out the class in the first couple of lectures making some important definitions about sole proprietorships, partnerships, what's a corporation, how is it different. I talked about the difference between accounting and finance. I went through all of those. I talked about efficiency. I also began, and I've given this definition three times now, the definition of liquidity. And that is not, do not use ChatGPTs or Google to study for my exam. I set in their traps, and liquidity is one of them. You'll get an answer. And I told you, here's what Google will tell you. Here's what ChatGPT will tell you. Those are both going to get you the wrong answer for my exam. Look at what I gave you and look at the quizzes where I've asked you twice about it. Know the right definitions. I also talked early on about financial institutions, financial intermediation. Make sure that you know that about that. So go back and find financial intermediation. Get that definition down. Get down the difference between accounting and finance in terms of costs. What do we care about in finance That is not the same thing that accounting cares about. That doesn't mean that one is wrong and one is right. Our focus is different. In finance, you tell me what we in finance consider costs. But again, do make sure that you understand risk as far as the structure of business structure goes, who's at risk and all of that. And make sure you know who has, in a corporation, who has more risk, bondholders or stockholders, and why. Get that down. And I'll stop so you can catch up here. Okay. Let me look here. I actually go through this. I'm not guessing. I'm looking right at the exam that I'm going to give you so I can give you as straight as I can. Make sure you know some of the details of a corporation, how it rewards the stockholders. How do you make money from owning stock in a corporation? Make sure you know that. And how is that different from how a bondholder investor? What is the motive for a bond? Is it safer than stock? If so, why? Is stock riskier than bonds? If so, why? Get through your notes and also listen to the podcast, because I say these things there. And I'm the first to tell you that my lectures are dense, and sometimes it's fast. So you have a chance always to go back and listen to those podcasts. Slow it down. If I'm boring you, speed it up. Make sure you know what I mean when I talk about the price of a stock. There are actually two different prices. There is the market price, but there's also something called the intrinsic price. How do we know if a stock is near the intrinsic price? What number tells us that? In the same vein, how do we know if a stock is risky or not? What number tells us that? Okay, just as a quickie here. When I say let's look at the numbers, I've talked about more than a few of the numbers that we look at with the stocks. Well, in general, what's an index versus an exchange? Digging down into looking at particular stocks. What do certain numbers tell us? What is the bid and what is the ask? What do they mean? I've talked about market cap, PE ratio, beta. I do these every day. And of course, obviously, holding period return. Now, you can do that on your calculator if you remember the steps, but I've also got that spreadsheet that makes it super easy to do it. If you just know, just put in the numbers where they belong. And I probably don't need to say this again, but it's always the white blocks, white cells, where you put stuff in. Leave everything else alone. The real challenge, of course, is always what number goes where and which spreadsheet, which worksheet or panel on a worksheet should I use. I've tried to streamline that by asking the questions, the numerical questions, in the order of the sheets and the panels in the sheets. Okay. Now, as far as financial statements go, I wouldn't ask you anything really deep, but I might say, okay, which sheet do you find this on? Which sheet would you use to calculate the current ratio? Or which sheet would I need to find net operating working capital? So make sure you're familiar enough with the financial statements. And you had this in, obviously, in your accounting class too. So I'm not too worried about you being able to pull the right sheets out for knowing where to find numbers. Let me keep going here. Now, as far as ratios go, as I said, I would certainly not have you calculate a ratio. That's kind of like, that's accounting stuff. It's what I want is for you to know what ratios mean. And in some cases, you have these groups of ratios. Well, which one in that group is bigger than another one in that group? Because they are related. Like total asset turnover versus fixed asset turnover. Let me go back to liquidity just briefly. Make sure you know the correct definition of liquidity. Also about liquidity, there's more to it than that. What does, why would a company not want super high liquidity? What is it about the expected return to highly liquid assets versus the expected to return to more durable assets that you could use that money for? Now I'm looking at this and I can't emphasize this enough. It's like looking at my quizzes. In some parts, it's just like, oh, I asked that on quiz two. That was quiz four. So make sure that you go through and you can nail those questions that are on the quiz. And that will give you a really good step up for getting some quick answers for my midterm exam. Now, as far as present and future value go, make sure you know about compounding versus discounting, what the names of the different annuities are. There are ordinary annuities, annuities due, periodic annuities, level annuities, perpetuities. Make sure you know that terminology, just the wording. And at the same time, also make sure that you know what changing a rate in a formula does to the value of a present value or a future value. How is the rate I use to find something related to the size of what I find? It's not really, well, in a way it's a math question, but it's also just think about what it means to find a present value. What are you doing to the cash flows out there? Or to find a future value, what are you doing to the amounts that's starting it out if you're taking it to a future value? Think of it in that way, and that'll help you a lot with answering one of my questions. Oh, mother's work is never done. Oh, I went through, I talked a little about financial intermediaries like commercial banks, investment banks, ETFs, mutual funds. I won't hit you with a really complex question, but I will ask you to make sure that you know about some of those funds, because in your own lives, you're going to eventually be doing things with ETFs, mutual funds. You all have some kind of a bank you use now. So make sure that you just know what each kind of thing does, kind of those, what its specialty is. Interest rates. Know the parts of the risk-free rate and know the parts of the risk premium. I might say, okay, which would have, what would be the most important premium on a credit card? Or which one of these would have a high default premium? Or what is the risk premium most noticeable in a long-term treasury debt instrument? Get that down before I go on, because that would help you a lot if you know that with one question. Let me reel it back. There was one I forgot. A kind of a basic one. How do you make money off a stock investment? There are two ways. What are they? Now, I said that I will not beat you up on bonds. After the break, we'll go through bonds again, the math of them. I showed it to you, but I'm more interested in making sure that you do know some of the terminology of bonds. Remember, I talked about bonds, different kinds, mortgage versus debenture, callable, puttable, convertible, foreign bonds, Yankee bonds. Make sure you know the terminology and also the fundamental relationship between price and yield. I showed it to you in that example of treasury bills, T-bills. And then I fussed about it for several minutes. There is a fundamental relationship between price and yield. Know it. Yeah. Now there is a matching section, it's just pure terminology. And it's all through the course. I've been putting to you terms that might or might not have been leading to something else, but almost always there was a reason I told you this term. Terms like rotation, safe harbor, flight to quality, money, capital, spot, forward. Leverage, capital structure, free cash flow, working capital. Just a whole range of terms I've filled you with. As I may have told you before, there is a comprehensive list of terms that are in the course. And that number of terms actually counts more than 400. And I'm certainly going to limit it, not do trivial terms or anything like that, but it is a robust part of the course. Spend time, write down, if you see in your notes, a term or a word, put it down on a piece of paper, then go through and make sure that you can get a good definition of each. And again, I caution you, strongly caution you, you type one of these words or terms into Google and have its AI give you a definition, it will almost in every instance give you an incorrect definition. This is a major thing that is the reliance on Wikipedia, Google, Claude, Copilot, OpenAI. They don't give the right answers. They give what they have found in databases. They don't distinguish a good database from a bad database. That's not how they work. They're extremely fast, and the first thing they find, which usually means that it's going to be some easy access, no paywall place, you're going to get a wrong answer. And I have several questions marked as chat traps in my exam. Okay. Okay. The questions, again, the math questions are the same ones that I have done quizzes 3 and 4. I was just trying to build you up so that you can nail them to the wall. Now, it's your choice how you play an exam. Some people go after those and get them out of the way first. Other people say, no, I'll wait till the end. But one thing that is for sure is that I have a number of questions which are at my easiest level. You should be able to get those. If you got all of those, you would probably pass or at least almost pass the exam. Then there are a couple of levels up. But the one thing is for sure is clean out what you can do fast and then leave the rest of the exam for after you've gotten some easy points. That's my strongest piece of advice to you. Now I will be in my office and our teaching assistant will be in the office tomorrow. We have a lot of hours that we can provide for you. On Wednesday, I'll make time for you as well in my office. And then from there, we come to the exam, we do the attendance, and again, do not leave the classroom to do the exam somewhere else, and don't hand a password to some friend, because that's just the end of that friend's test. As soon as we match the attendance to the taker that's not in the classroom. So make sure you're here and you're all prepared for a good, excellent time. On my first midterm exam, the average is generally around a 76% to 79%. By the time of the final, it's about an 81%. And that's exclusively because, well, at the midterm, everyone's gotten better prepared for the final, and a few people have gotten out of the way who weren't making it. So the average on the final is a little better for that too. But you can pass this and you can do pretty darn well on it if you just follow what I've told you to do. Now it's your turn. Ask me questions, anything you want about it, about the exam. Don't ask me what is the meaning of life. I can't tell you that unless I'm drunk. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Will definitions from the textbook work?
No, the lecture, my exams and quizzes are based on lecture. And again, I've said this a few times. The homework is your textbook. The quizzes and midterm and final are the lectures. And so if it's in the book, but I haven't mentioned it at all in class, it's not going to be on your exam. But if I've mentioned it, whether or not it's in the book, it's fair game for an exam. Yeah. One thing I should caution you when I say this is that some of them are like multiple part or the matchings, but I can give you a real quick idea. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. What did I do there? I was, did I, where did I lose my freaking count? Okay, it's, Oh, don't get old. Just have your friends put you in a home. I mean, God, I think it's about 46. I'm thinking, counting multiple, you know, matching and all that. Oh yeah, do the give me your attendance right now and attendance radar. If you got any more questions, just raise your hand. Yeah. All of them. I mean, there's right now how for their okay, each of my different sections has its own podcast, and I think, where am I right now? I think I'm at about, there's 14. Okay, there are 14 podcasts. Now, one thing you can do is, of course, you can speed it up, and, you know, you don't have to listen to it if I'm groaning or I'm saying stuff that's trivial, and you can also slow it down, too. So if you were to go through those, I tell you, actually, the first couple of lectures are pretty foundational, but where you should focus, if you don't want to listen to me moan through all of my lectures again, focus on the ones where there was what you didn't get really well at all the first time. Okay, if I'm saying in class and you're saying, I didn't get that at all, I don't understand what he was talking about when he was talking about, like, for example, the calculation, the spreadsheet. You could actually open up the spreadsheet and listen to it and walk through it with me. And those would be ones like present and future value lectures. Those two, time value of money lectures, are very important, really critical. And then there were a couple of other ones before that, like the class, the lectures on financial intermediation were pretty heavy on terminology. And of course, I think the first and second lectures, you should listen to those just because that was foundational definitions, you know, like static and dynamic efficiency and corporate versus sole proprietorship and partnership in those first two lectures. So yeah, there are some that you would want to prioritize mainly based upon how you feel, how much you feel comfortable with what you learned, what's in your notes, really. But follow through on them. There's up there just for you to listen to again. And then you can even send me an email message. I didn't quite catch what you were saying in this lecture, in the podcast, and I'll answer you real quick. Yeah. Say that again. ISU-PROF.com. And, of course, there's also the Apple equivalent of it, too. Matter of fact, let me put it up here. Real quick for you. I don't think I want, I'm just going to save this and then I'm going to take this over here. And I'm going to, let me pull it up for you right here. Okay, let me get this over here. And you can see it. ISU-PROF.com. Now, if you don't want to hang around on my creepy ass website and listen to them, you can always go, this is a hidden link right here that takes you over to Apple iTunes, where they are repeated there. The one thing I would caution you is that iTunes archives, like after 10, the 11th is archived after that. So if you're going back too far, you'd probably have to stay on my original website here. And another thing is, and I've said this before, and I don't want to belabor it, but your section is section one, so you can click on this, and the podcast plays. It's a professional production meeting Apple iTunes standards. I had to prove myself about 15 years ago to be one of their first education podcasters long ago. But as you can see... Okay, shut up. Okay. And then, of course, on the sidebar here, down here, these are entire courses in FIL 240. You can click into any of these and listen to a lecture on the same subject from another semester if you wanted just a different way that I would have presented it in another class. And I do vary somewhat from one semester to the other. I don't do scripts. So you might hear a better if when I go through present value. You could click into any one of these semesters and listen to the lecture on present value, and you get another version of the lecture. So that's all available to you too. Yeah, and you could also listen to what I say in the other sections, because sometimes I give a very different approach to something and from one section to the other. They all have the same content, but something of a different perspective. So this is here for you to listen to. Why do I do this? Because I love you. No, I don't. These are there as one of those ultimate, you can relive the dream that was my lecture in person or not. Okay, any other questions? Well, if you're done with me, I am so over you. That's all I have for you. I thank you.